When wishes were horses and beggars could ride, in a stone castle by the sea there lived a rich laird.
What am I supposed to choose? There are so many.
And so he left the trail, and he followed the sound of the music.
I am the goat from the hills and the mountains. And when I have finished eating these herbs and these vegetables, then I shall eat you, too.
Once upon a time, and welcome to the Story Story Podcast. I'm your host, Isabel Hauser, and I have some stories for you. This is a podcast to hear traditional stories told by some of the best storytellers in the world. It will take you to long ago and far away, and will bring you back safely.
Hi folks, this is Rachel and Harding Poppygin here just for a little warning. Some stories on this episode may be a little spooky and have moments that may not be suitable for younger listeners. If you're responsible for tender ears, you might want to take a listen first or forge ahead and enjoy the chills.
It was a glorious winter day, bright sunshine on freshly fallen snow. I met with a fellow storyteller in one of the most ancient parts of Switzerland, where our country was founded many centuries ago. A place where history seeps from the snow-capped mountains into a glittering lake. Steeped in conversation, we strolled along the lake, every once in a while noticing the two swans that were gliding to our right on the water. Their wings were as shimmering as the snow on the meadows on our left. After a little while, our path took a turn away from the water into the marshland. Reeds and long dry grasses were silently swaying by our side as we walked on. Suddenly, we heard something. A beating of wings, a movement of air. We turned around just as the two swans flew over our heads, so close we might have touched their long, graceful necks, had we not been stunned and starstruck. Then, one of the swans dropped something from its beak, a glint in the air, and then they were gone. The teller is Mary Robertson, storyteller, author, public speaker, and my favorite part, lover of unicorns. Hello, fellow unicorn enthusiast. Mary was born and raised in Ottawa, Canada, where she lives, writes, and performs to this day. She loves telling stories to people of all ages, and she also brings the art of storytelling to her job as a federal public servant. There, she teaches a workshop focusing on mental health and personal storytelling. She also loves a good party, so if you'll invite her, she'll bring stories and cookies. And now, please enjoy Mary tell La Chasse Galerie.
It was New Year's Eve, in the depth of the forest, at the head of the Gatineau River. The winter had just set in, and the snow outside had already piled up to the roof of the shanty where the lumberjacks were settled for the night. After sleeping a few hours, one of the men, Joe, was roughly awakened by his friend Baptiste.
Joe, it's past midnight. There's nothing to do here, so I am going to go to La Valterie
to see my sweetheart.
Will you come with me?
To La Valterie, said Joe. Are you crazy? We're 300 miles away from there, and you couldn't travel that distance in 2 months.
Don't you understand? Baptiste said.
We will travel in the birch bark canoe, and we'll be back here tomorrow in time for breakfast. Now Joe understood. Baptiste was proposing that they should run La Chasse Galerie. In other words, ask the devil to enchant their canoe to fly through the air, risk selling their very souls, all for the fun of going to give a New Year's kiss to their girls at La Valterie. That was a little too much to ask, even for a rough sort of fellow like Joe. Now Baptiste was starting to tease him. Oh, what a little old grandmother you are. Are you afraid? There's no danger whatsoever. We can go to La Valterie and be back before dawn. We just need to remember the rules of the Chasse Galerie. Not to take the Lord's name in vain, and not to touch the crosses on the steeples when we travel. That's easy enough. all a man has to do is look where he goes, think about what he says, and not touch a drop of liquor on the way. I have already made the trip 5 times, and look at me! The devil has not got me yet, has he? We just need an 8th man to run the canoe, and that's you. Come on! Think of your girl, huh? Well, Joe was mighty tempted, so he was led outside the shanty where 6 men were waiting, paddles in hand. The birch bark canoe was lying on a snowbank. Before he could think, Joe was seated in the bow, waiting for the signal to go. Baptiste took his place in the stern. Are you all ready? Ready. Then repeat after me. O King of the Infernal Regions, we promise to sell you our souls if, before dawn, we take the Lord's name in vain, or if we touch a cross on the voyage. On this condition, you shall transport us through the air, wherever we want to go, and bring us back safe and sound to the shanty. A Cabri, a Cabra, a Cabram, fais-nous voyageurs par-dessus les montagnes. The last words were hardly pronounced when they felt the canoe rising in the air to a height of 500 feet. At Baptiste's command, they started to paddle, and the canoe shot out like an arrow, and off they went under the protective wing of the devil himself. Soon they saw a bright, glistening belt of clear ice that was the Gatineau River. They sailed over silver steeples, over forests, rivers, towns, villages, leaving behind them a trail of sparks in the clear night sky. They followed the river to La Valtrie all the way to the brightly lit farmhouse where music and laughter could be heard, where their sweethearts waited inside. The canoe landed in a snowbank. The men dragged it to the riverside to hide it, and Baptiste pronounced his last warning. No nonsense, do you hear? You may dance, you may eat, but no cursing. And at the first sign, follow me out without attracting attention. We can't be too careful. They had only a few hours. To escape the clutches of the devil, they had to return to the shanty before the break of dawn. They knocked at the door, which was answered by the surprised party-goers, but there was no time to explain how and why the man had miraculously appeared. Joe wasted no time in tracking down his lovely Liza and indulging in a dance. For 2 hours they danced without stopping. Joe was so busy with his lovely girlfriend, he didn't notice that Baptiste was visiting the buffet rather often with some of the other boys, and that every once in a while he appeared to be lifting his elbow in a rather suspicious manner. When 4 o'clock struck, all the members of the crew began to edge out of the house without attracting attention, but Joe had to drag Baptiste before he would consent to go. At last they were all out, but it was quite clear that Baptiste was too tipsy to steer the canoe. Now, look out, old friend, said Joe. Just keep a clear mind and steer straight for the mountain of Montreal, all right? I know how to steer, answered Baptiste, and you had all better take your paddles and mind your own business. And before anyone had time for further reflections, A Cabri, A Cabra, A Cabram, fais-nous voyageurs par-dessus les montagnes. And up they went like lightning, steering southwest. If Baptiste's management of the boat could be called steering, they flew over the church at Contrecoeur, coming so close to hitting the cross on the steeple. They skimmed by the mountain and came within 2 feet of striking the big cross on the hill. To the right, Baptiste! To the right! Steer to the right, or else you will send us all to the devil if you keep on going that way. Baptiste turned roughly to the right, almost upending the canoe and the travelers inside. Joe was frightened. If Baptiste kept on steering like this, they would never make it back home alive. He wrestled his way to the front and took Baptiste's place in the stern, after binding his hands in rope and stuffing a rag in his mouth to quiet him. With the dawn on the horizon, they paddled for dear life and eternal salvation. They followed the Ottawa River as far as they could, then steered due north by the polar star. They were flying through the air. Everything was going well and steady, until Batsist, still drunk, managed to slip out of the ropes and pull out his gag. The men were so busy paddling that the first thing they knew, Batsist was standing in the canoe, waving his paddle above his head and yelling at the top of his lungs, "Ha ha ha! Golis, nom de Dieu de tabarnak! Ha ha ha!" Joe was so shocked by the sudden cursing that a false move of his paddle caused the canoe to hit the top branches of a big tree. All the men tumbled out one by one, dropping down from branch to branch, landing in the snow beneath. And everything went dark. Well, let me tell you, it was about 8 the next morning when Joe awoke in his bunk in the shanty. Some of the lumberjacks who'd stayed behind said they found all 8 men up to their necks in a neighboring snowbank at the foot of this monster pine tree and said, "You men must have gotten into the stores of rum and had yourself a private little party out there." Luckily, no one was seriously hurt, though they were a little bit bruised and scratched, but they were alive and whole, their souls intact. By some stroke of luck, maybe because it was New Year's or because he had better plans for their immortal souls down the road, but the devil was feeling generous on that particular night, and he let them off easy. As for the birch bark canoe, well, it might still be up at the top of that tree if anyone's willing to go take a look.
The fairy tale sponsor for this episode is Six Swans Magical Offerings. Is there a special someone you wish to present with a one-of-a-kind gift? Something that will be a surprise for the both of you, with the promise of being magical and unique? Then look no further and place your order with Six Swans Magical Offerings today. From our vast treasury at the bottom of all lakes, we draw a fitting boon for everyone. Within one turn of the moon, we deliver around the world on all days except for midsummer and midwinter. To place your order, simply write the name, date of birth, and eye color of the recipient on a piece of paper, put it into a bottle, and place that bottle in the nearest body of water. Please note that bathtubs and sinks won't work, and we do not receive complaints or returns. Not that this is ever necessary, because our magic never fails. Six Swans Magical Offerings, the perfect gift for everyone. This episode is also brought to you by our new patron, Chloe White. Not only is Chloe a generous supporter of the arts, she also has a magical ability. On the nights of a full moon, Chloe can hear the fairy music play, and I hear that sometimes she's invited to dance along. So now you know why she has the most enchanting moves on the dance floor. Would you like to know what your magical ability is? We are delighted to gaze into the crystal ball or fairy tale book for you and let you know if you become a patron of the podcast. Join us at patreon.com/storystorypodcast or storystorypodcast.com. Then you'll hear about your magical fairy tale skill for as little as $4 a month. We also love reading from you, be it a review on Apple Podcasts or an email to storystorypodcast@gmail.com. Share your favorite stories, wishes, hopes, and perhaps also dreams. A hopeful thank you to all the patrons who make this podcast possible. You are the promise of warmth in our cold winter sunshine. My storyteller friend and I looked at each other and then at the spot where whatever the swan had dropped lay glinting. Carefully, we picked our way across the snow-patched marsh and found a tiny silver bell on a crimson ribbon. The bell was the size of a thimble and looked like something straight out of a fairy tale. I shook it very gently
and a sense of ease came over me that was so profound I gave a deep sigh. At the same time, my friend quietly said, "I feel so hopeful." For a little while, we wondered where the spell came from and what it was for. In the end, we agreed that it made no difference. After all, wonders don't need a rational explanation, do they? We decided to take turns in keeping the bell and only ring it on special occasions. Have you ever received a similar gift? What was it? I'd love to hear from you.
Hi, this is Rachel and Harding popping in. I know this is not my episode, this is Isabel's episode, but I forgot to give her the second story that was going with this episode, and time zones are a thing, and we had to go back and forth a bit. Anyway, the second story for this episode is Kevin Cordy. For over 25 years, Kevin Cordy has not only told stories on a national and international platform, but he uses stories to help others find meaning in their work, school, and personal lives. This is him telling the mysterious story, The Snow Woman.
In Japan, there were two woodsmen. One was much, much older, but wiser. And his son, his adopted son, would listen to all the words that he provided. And he would go out with his father, and they would cut down the woods. It was a quiet night at first, but soon the animals knew that the frost was coming. And he looked at his son and said, "I can tell something's going on. We need to go back. It's going to get cold." And no sooner than he said that, the wind began to pick up. At first it was light, but it began to be ferocious. The wind was blinding. It was a blinding snowstorm. And they trudged the way to get back. And he said, "I know the way, come. I hope the ferryman's there." For you see, there was a tumultuous river that they had tried to build a bridge, but the water would raise, and it swept the bridge away. So now there was just a little ferryman's hut that would help carry them across. But when they got through the blinding snow, they could barely see the hut. And he looked, and he noticed the ferryman wasn't there. "Son, come, quickly. Get into this hut." It didn't have a fireplace. It barely had a door. It had one open window where the wind would rush through. But he had one blanket that he uncovered. It wasn't much. They were wearing their straw hats, and they bent down, and the rain and the snow, you could hear it. It was like an echo chamber. And he said, "He'll have to be there in the morning. He'll take us across. We'll have to sleep here. It'll be cold, but I'll put my arms around you. Just stay warm and try to sleep." And he was older, and pretty soon sleep came upon him. But the boy stayed awake. He could hear all the wind and the snow, and it was unsettling. And it was long into the night, when his eyes were starting to drift away, when he heard the sound. And he thought he was dreaming, but he was awoken when the door shattered into 1,000 pieces. And he looked at the far end, and there was a woman who at first looked beautiful, with long black hair. She had piercingly ghostly white skin. She was white all over. Her eyes set her apart, for one had to look at them and know you could not look away. And she glided across the floor, not moving, but gliding. And she reached one pale white outstretched hand, and she lifted that old man like he was nothing. And she picked him up. And she looked at him. And she saw how old he was. and she looked at him, and she picked him up, and she took a giant breath, and she breathed onto the old man, and the old man's face and body froze, and one could see the life of the old man leave as this white ghost-like woman stole the life. That's when she noticed the young man and saw the life in his eyes. And she reached to pick him up, and she stopped, and she said, "His life was almost over, but yours has just begun. I will leave you be, but tell no one, not even your own mother, what you have seen tonight, or I will return, and I will come back, and I will take what I didn't today." And the wind carried her off, and she left just as she arrived. The next morning, the ferryman came. Despite the wind, he saw the blown-off door, and he saw the man, the young man, holding the lifeless body of his father. And he could barely say anything except, "Take me away. Take me away." And he went back to his mother. He was the only one left to work. So every day in the early morning, he would come out and he would cut the wood and he would bring it back and they would sell what they could. And it took many, many years, but he tried to forget what he'd saw. And he told absolutely no one of what he saw. And one particular night, many years later, he saw a young lady wearing just a small cap above her head. You could look at her and tell that she was lost. And he approached her ever so quietly. And with each step, he noticed her beauty. He noticed her. He said, "Miss, can I help you?" He said, I'm lost. I'm trying to get my way to the city, and I'm not sure where I am." And he said, "Well, I know the way, but it's far. I would like to take you home and give you a quick meal. I can tell you haven't eaten, and I'd like you to introduce you to my mother, and then we'll let you be on your way." He took the young lady and he went back to their small home, and the mother, although advanced in age, smiled when he saw her, and they ate together, and she told her story. She said she was an orphan and she had no parents, and she was heard the rumor that she had an uncle that might take care of her, but she wasn't sure. She stayed a week and another week. And as the woodsman would come back, he would look forward to sharing his day with her. He would share about the animals that he'd saw, and they would build the fire together. And the mother got older and older, and soon weeks became months, and in truth they became years. And the mother was on her deathbed when they professed their love for each other. And soon after they married and had seven children together. And she was sitting and by the fireplace, waiting for him to get home. He was carrying all the wood, and when he got home, he looked at her and all his children, and one of them, a baby, yet to come. She was knitting something for the baby. And either it was something about the fireplace or the way the fire glistened, he realized then how happy he was. And he looked at her, and he said, "Dear, just the way you're sitting, just the way you look, reminds me of a time a long time ago. It seems to be a fading memory, but my father, you never met him. We were hunting one day," and he began to tell him the story, and she began to knit. But she began to knit, and she would pound and poke harder and stronger into the fabric as the story was being told. He would tell her about the father, and he got to the point of the snow woman who came in. The snow woman, also known as the Yuki Anana, the spirit that takes your life away. And at that point she rose, and her glistening eyes started to change, and her skin became pale white, and she looked at him and said, "I told you never to tell anyone." And she lifted him above like it was nothing. "I now must take what I didn't before." And as she held him, she heard the sound of their children and the child yet to come. And she looked at all her children and she said, "I will grant you mercy to raise our children because they are ours." And she left as she glided out. What became of her, one never knows. He never married, but ever now and then he could hear. He swore he could hear the snow say, "Take care of them." And he raised his family. And as a result, he never saw her again.
Thank you for listening to the Story Story Podcast. Show the love. Find Mary Robertson at maryvrobertson.com. Tell her you heard her on the podcast and now want to hear her tell more stories. If you have questions or comments for the podcast, you can send them to us at storystorypodcast@gmail.com. You can also connect with me directly at isabelhauser.com. If you get in touch, let me know the favorite story you have heard or the favorite stories of your childhood. Who knows? Maybe you will hear them here soon. The inspiration for the fairy tale sponsor truly came from the two swans that passed overhead when I was walking by the lake with a fellow storyteller the other day. And that was also the inspiration for the true fairy tale. The music, as always, is by Poddington Bear. This podcast is made possible by patrons like you. Consider becoming a patron or joining the mailing list to get podcast goodies or writing a review on Apple Podcasts, which helps other story lovers find and enjoy the show. You will hear more stories next week, but until then, live happily ever after.
Mary Kate opened up the door, and there on the doorstep, wrapped in his own blanket, was her baby.
And to this day, Anansi spins webs so that he can catch the flea, the fly, and the moth that got away.
If you go down to the lake on a clear day when the water lies as calm as a sheet of glass, you can still see the rooftops of the castle glittering in the sunlight. And if you listen really closely, you can even hear the festive music from the royal court.